Welcome back for episode 3 of our series on osteopetrosis. So far, we have covered the general facts about the disease and the autosomal dominant inheritance pattern of osteopetrosis. Today, we're going to talk about the second inheritance pattern. This is an even more rare form of the disease. However, it's much more severe. Autosomal recessive osteopetrosis is commonly known as malignant infantile osteopetrosis. A dominant inheritance pattern, like we said last time, only takes one abnormal gene from one parent to yield a 50% chance in inheriting the disease. However, to be recessive, the individual must inherit two abnormal copies of a gene, one from each parent. This yields a 25% chance in each child having the disease. However, in this case, it's 50% more likely for two affected parents' offspring to become a carrier of the disease. This form of the disease affects one in every 250,000 people. Just as all other forms of osteopetrosis, the malfunction occurs in bone resorption cells called osteoclasts. This includes an insufficient or defective function of these cells. These cells are crucial for the replacement of old bone, bone remodeling, as well as microfracture repair. Fun fact, our human skeleton is completely regenerated every 10 years, so it's really important for our osteoclasts to keep up with this change. Autosomal recessive osteopetrosis is typically very severe in nature and manifests during infancy. This form of the disease can be attributed to a mutation in the osteoclast-associated gene TCIGR1. Defects in this gene are found in 50 to 60% of cases. This gene encodes the function of a large protein complex and makes the A3 subunit of this complex. This complex is called the vacuolar ATPases. It is essentially a pump and is found on the surface of osteoclasts. These are embedded in the folded membranes called the ruffled border. This border faces the surface of the bone. Now, when these function correctly, the ATPase moves positively charged hydrogen atoms or protons across membranes. This movement helps regulate the pH and acidity. However, when this VATPase cannot pump protons out of the osteoclast, the space between the ruffled border and bone is not acidified and bone cannot be broken down. This then leads to the abnormally thick bones categorized in osteopetrosis. Now that we know what actually causes this form of the disease, let's talk a little bit more about the symptoms. Now, in general, osteopetrosis is characterized by overly dense bones throughout the body. However, in this form of the disease, we see effects on almost all parts of the body. If it is left untreated, it can actually even lead to death within the first 10 years of life. Now, the first symptoms usually present in hematological findings. So this means it's usually present in our blood before any neurological symptoms arise. A big problem that results in death for many of these children has to do with our bone marrow function. Bone marrow is found within the spongy or cancellous portion of all bones. This is the site of red blood cell, white blood cell, and platelet production. The process in which these new blood cells are formed is known as hematopoiesis. Now, dense bones actually impair the function of bone marrow and prevent it from producing new blood and immune system cells. This is called pancytopenia. Extramedullary hematopoiesis is usually present in osteopetrosis, which is actually the development of blood cells and blood outside of the bone marrow, like in the spleen or liver. This typically causes an enlarged spleen and liver. This can lead to frequent infections such as pneumonia and urinary tract infections. Abnormal bleeding is also very common. So is anemia, which is a shortage of red blood cells due to reduced bone marrow space and destruction of red blood cells due to the enlarged spleen. Thrombocytopenia is very common as well, which is a decreased number of platelets and low white blood cell counts, which definitely has an effect on these different infections and pneumonia that these sufferers experience. Now, our platelets are our clotting cells, and white blood cells are like the armed forces in our body that rush to the site to fight infection. An impaired function in these cells make patients exposed to much higher rates of infection. Mostly all children with this form of osteopetrosis develop some of these life-threatening complications, and almost all have severe issues in the bone marrow. So it's important to see how all of these symptoms work together and create a snowball effect that make this disease as serious as it is. So for example, it's all connected. These abnormally dense bones caused a narrowing in the space in bone marrow, which then depletes the production of healthy red and white blood cells, which then affects blood flow as well as immune function. So now let's take a look at how the abnormally dense bones affect the nerves as well. So in this form of the disease, we see macrocephaly, which is an abnormally large head due to increased density of the cranial bones, hydrocephalus, or a buildup of cerebrospinal fluid in the brain is also reported. This accumulation of fluid is typically caused by a narrowing in the foramen magnum. This foramen is essentially an opening that allows cranial nerves as well as spinal arteries to pass through it, which is extremely important. As fluid builds up and the head enlarges even more, compression of these nerves are extremely common. Now, these nerves do grow normally, but they become trapped, and it constricts the flow through the nerves. This usually results in vision loss, hearing loss, and facial paralysis. Now, slow growth and short stature are also noted in these patients with the malignant form of this disease. Dental abnormalities such as micronathia or small jaws, delayed tooth development, and infections are once again common. Now, in some cases, brain abnormalities, intellectual disability, or epilepsy are even present, which is actually due to low levels of calcium in the blood. We will also still see some of the same effects from the autosomal dominant form, such as fractures. It's actually also diagnosed in similar ways that we talked about before, such as genetic testing, x-rays, and blood panels. In this form of the disease, it can actually be diagnosed after the 15th week of pregnancy in ultrasounds. X-ray findings are specific and considered sufficient enough to make a diagnosis. Once the diagnosis has been made, blood tests are then ran. Some of these tests include serum calcium levels, parathyroid hormone levels, phosphorus levels, etc. Low levels of calcium or hypocalcemia and low parathyroid hormones will be present in the blood. These measurements will help doctors determine where the supplementation is needed. So, for example, if calcium supplements should be used to accurately treat the specific symptoms of the disease. MRIs should also be used routinely to evaluate cranial nerve involvement. Affected individuals should also be regularly monitored by endocrinologists, ophthalmologists, dentists, orthopedics, neurologists, and hematology specialist. Currently, there is only one established cure, and this doesn't even cover every patient suffering from this form of the disease. This is done by hematopoietic stem cell transplantation. What this does is it allows the patient to receive donor-derived functioning osteoclasts in hope that bone resorption can continue normally. However, like I said, this isn't a cure-all for every patient, and certain mutations will not benefit from the stem cell implantation. For those who don't receive stem cells, steroids and other vitamin supplements may be considered. Early onset osteopetrosis not treated with bone marrow transplantation usually causes death during infancy or early childhood. Like I stated before, the death usually results from anemia, infection, or bleeding. So with this form of the disease, we learned how it affects our bones, nerves, muscles, blood, the immune system, and other vital organs like the liver and the spleen. On next week's episode, it will be our last topic of discussion on osteopetrosis. Here we will talk about the rarest form of osteopetrosis, known as intermediate autosomal osteopetrosis, which is sometimes even accompanied with renal tubular acidosis. We will also touch upon the X-linked form of the disease, which actually happens to target or affect mainly males. So stay tuned. We've almost mastered the course and all there is to know about osteopetrosis.